Bernie Sanders back in the news. People are going to die if we follow Trump care. But is that a problem? Apparently,
it's not a scare tactic either.
Yeah, no.
Millions of people are going to die.
Apparently, to many in America, the CEOs, that's not a problem. Apparently, a large portion of, especially CEOs in Silicon Valley, are psychopaths. Okay, really?
Huh.
Apparently so, according to a speaker at the South by Southwest Festival. We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Cause we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Cause we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Glad you're here. Bernie Sanders is at least honest. This is why I do like Bernie Sanders. He's at least honest. Listen to this tweet. Never lose sight of the fact that our ultimate goal is not just playing defense. Our goal is Medicare for all, a single-payer system. He's at least the only one who has the balls to say, we're not looking for a fix on this. We're looking for a single-payer system, which is why he's out now saying what he's saying. That, again, not a scare tactic.
If the Affordable Care Act, if Obamacare is repealed, we are looking at hundreds of thousands of people.
Can we stop for a second? Can we stop for a second? Could somebody please get Larry David audio of him doing Bernie Sanders? Because I don't think you can tell the difference between Bernie Sanders and Larry David.
So and it's just Larry David talking normally. It's talking not him doing Bernie Sanders.
Right. Yeah. It's just him talking the way he normally talks. They sound exactly alike.
In extension, losing that. And how many of those folks will die? How many of those folks will lose the opioid treatment that they now have? It is a lot. I don't know exactly, but it is
millions.
A whole lot.
Billions, maybe.
Billions?
Billions. It could be trillions. I mean, there could be trillions of dead people. It's laying all over the place. Piles of dead bodies everywhere. Cholera sweeping through every land on this planet. Dogs and cats sleeping together. It's going to be bedlam. It's going to be chaos. It's just, dare touch that bill, everyone dies. Everyone.
Well, the way they're talking about touching it, I think that there is a lot of suffering that is coming. I mean, we had we warned about a different kind of suffering. Everybody was worried about, you know, the 13 million to 26 million that needed health care coverage. Yeah. And we said, then why don't we develop a package for those 13 million or 26 million? And leave right. everybody
why
else
punish
alone.
Everybody else who likes their insurance?
Correct.
Why do that?
But they wanted a single-payer system for everyone. They wanted socialized medicine. And so we didn't go. And we warned, if you do this, you might get a few people down at the bottom on healthcare, but you are going to disrupt and destroy the healthcare system in America. And we're already seeing it happen. Mm-hmm. And look at how many families are in significant pain right now because of Obamacare. Now, Trump comes along with Ryan. He's not going to make it better. It's only going to make it worse. You can't fix. It's broken. It was never intended on working. You can't fix this. You've got to pull it up by the roots, and then let's look at the 13 or 26 million that need health care.
It's such a great study, however, in the way progressivism works and why it's so successful. Because look at this. Republicans have control of everything, and they can't even bring themselves to repeal something that's brand new. This is an entitlement that existed for the last, 6 years? This is a brand new thing. Forget about Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and reforming those. This is a brand new thing that has been entirely unpopular since it began. and they still can't repeal it.
No, it's not that they can't. They won't.
That's
they
what I mean. I'm saying politically, they can't do it. They can't bring themselves
can.
To do it.
I think they can. I really
think. Of course
think.
They can. What I'm saying is they're not. Do it. I yeah. get you're right. Theoretically, they could do it. But what I'm saying is when an entitlement is started, these people are so spineless, they won't even move against something that's brand
See,
new.
What I'm saying, though, is I don't think it's spinelessness.
You think they just want it?
I think they want it.
Why, though, then did they oppose it initially?
Because you've got to oppose what the other side is doing. Why did the other side go along with all of the signing documents from the president?
Yeah.
Well, why would they go along with him just, you know, having executive order after executive order and being fine? Because it was their side. Now they're suddenly against
yeah.
them.
I mean, you're probably right.
And we were against them. Now we're suddenly for them.
I see what you're saying. And I think you're probably right on that. It's interesting because if you went back in history in 2008 and none of this ever happened, none of the Obamacare ever happened, and it was never even proposed. And Barack Obama came to the plate and said, here's my plan, and handed us, instead of the ACA, the AHCA, the new GOP replacement, and handed that bill, nobody would have accepted it. No one would have voted for it. It would have been a massive expansion of government power, extreme from what we were considering at the time. Right. But now, because of 6 years of Obamacare.
But that's the Overton window.
It's the Overton window.
And the Overton window, what the Overton window is you take something that is completely unreasonable now, and you just shift that window way down to truly insane. Then when you come back to compromise, you settle on a place that was totally unreasonable. It's just not insane. So the progressives use the Overton window. They shoot for insane. They settle for ridiculous.
And then it's not so ridiculous after
a couple
of years. It's
not so ridiculous. As soon as it's ridiculous, then pretty soon you get to the insane because they just keep moving that window. But the problem is we think there are honest brokers on each side. They're not honest brokers on each side. How many Democrats now are going, my gosh, I mean, yeah, I don't like Donald Trump at all. But where the heck is the representation of me on my side? I don't want universal Medicare. Medicare? That's not good. I don't want the rest of the country to be swept into the VA hospital. That's not a good system. What's happening is, instead of talking about the compassionate parts, Rand Paul, I think, was the one who was saying it. You can't repeal it. You have to start first with, what are we going to do for the 26 million people? Let's make sure that those 26 million people, or whatever is on the edge, that we have something taken care of first. We lead with that. Because all anybody is talking about is how many people are going to suffer. You know what? There are going to be some suffering people. And there are some suffering people now. Let's reduce the number of suffering. There will always be suffering people.
You're never going to be perfect.
Let's reduce the number of suffering people now.
And you know what? A lot of the people that didn't have health care to begin with chose not to have health care. It wasn't that they couldn't or they didn't have access to it. They did. Many of them, if not most, chose not to.
Okay. And here's the reason. Because I remember when I was 30, 25.
You're not worried about health care.
You're not worried about healthcare. You don't care.
And if you get sick, you go to the doctor and you just pay for it.
So here is my, unless you're catastrophically sick.
Right.
So here's the problem. Here, and this is a great example. The youth, by you in your 20s buying healthcare, you are paying for the healthcare now of the old people. Mm-hmm. That's why we need you into the pool. It's a charitable thing.
It's a massive wealth transfer.
It
is. What it is from young to old.
I'm taking my money and helping the old. And then when I'm old, somebody down at the bottom will be giving their money to me.
It's this from Donald Berwick, one of the architects.
And that any healthcare funding plan that is just, equitable, civilized, and humane must redistribute wealth from the richer among us to the poor and the less fortunate.
And there it was. It's Marxism. That's all it is. It's just a massive Marxist program to transfer wealth. Is that what we wanted in America? Who was clamoring for that? No one, except for these progressives.
I think this is actually, it brings up a pretty interesting sort of progressive Rorschach test. Think about this for a moment. The CBO, let's just assume everything the CBO said about this healthcare bill is true for a second. Say it's true. The main complaint is, hey, millions of people are going to drop off insurance. Millions of people that are insured today are going to drop off. Let's not question that for a moment. Let's not question the CBO's analysis that millions of people are going to drop off because they were afraid of this fine and they didn't want to pay the fine, so they decided to pay for insurance anyway. Let's say that's true for a moment. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Everyone will tell you that's a bad thing. Millions of people lost their insurance. Millions of people are not insured. However, if they were insured because the government was going to fine them and they were taking their hard-earned dollars and spending them on something against their will, if they lose their insurance and make that decision for themselves, that is a good thing. That is a good thing. It's their money, their lives. They get to choose what to do with them. And the fact that
if you
are a progressive and you think that's a terrible thing, well, they're making bad decisions. You are controlling their lives. They get to make those calls.
Here's the problem, because it's fake compassion. If you want to be able to say everybody has to make their own decisions, and if you choose not, you can afford it. And most people,
it was about half of the people who were uninsured could afford it.
Right. And they just choose not to. If you really want that system to work, then when it comes time and they've got a problem, you have to be willing to say,
sorry.
I'm sorry. And we as a society are
not willing to do that.
Well, in this Republican plan, our pre-existing conditions existing, all those little catches that were in Obamacare and were controversial when Obamacare was passed are all in the GOP plan.
Mm-hmm. Because we're not willing. And that's a good thing. We're not willing to see our fellow man be turned out of a hospital if they have cancer. That's a good thing.
But they weren't before either.
Right. Correct. They weren't before. So the real question is how do we solve a math problem while still having compassion? Because insurance, if I can buy in after I've been diagnosed with cancer, that's not insurance. Mm-hmm. That's not
something
insurance.
Else.
Insurance is a bet. And so the only way the insurance companies can work is if they are betting that this group of 1,000 people are going to be healthy, more healthy than not. As soon as that turns out to be different, they have to raise the rates.
Not only is it a bet, insurance is not just a bet. It's a losing bet almost all the time.
Yes.
It's a bet that insurance companies are in business because they know their side of the bet is the good side. You're supposed to lose your insurance bets. So when you can just come in and say, well, I know for a fact I have X, Y, and Z that's going to cost $100 million to fix, and I would like to pay the normal insurance rate. That's just a government program giving you things. That's not insurance. It's got nothing to do with insurance.
So how do we solve this with compassion and still use the free market system that demands that sometimes there are losers? How do you do it? A hybrid doesn't work. Unless you take things like Medicare and you say, okay, for this small group of people, we're going to take that small group of people and we are going to pay for that because of compassion, but not force everyone else into that.
Right. And that's the thing. You got to be honest about it. It's a program. There's a story today we have in our prep here from Texas, from Kevin Williamson over at National Review. Here it is. This is an example of Texas insurance companies, and the Texas legislature is trying to force Texas insurance companies to provide hearing aids for children. Okay, they want to make sure that they force it that to happen. Okay,
Now, the number of kids that have, it's about 0.2% are kids are born without with hearing loss in one or both ears. Texas has about 400,000 births a year. Assuming that all of the children born with hearing problems required $5,000 hearing aids, that none of their families had the means to pay for them, that would imply an annual outlay of $4 million if you take a more rational approach to that. Not every kid is not going to be able to have parents that can't afford it. Then it's about 30%, let's say, $1.2 million. That's the program. If you just wanted to give every kid that could not afford hearing aids, $1.2 million. Instead, they want to force everybody and everybody's insurance policy to cover these hearing aids, because then they're not responsible for it. The legislature doesn't have to come up with a way to pay for it. It's just, well, the insurance companies are now forced to do it. So now all of us get stuck paying for it. And whether you think it's a good idea or not, we all want deaf children to have hearing aids if it's needed. Be honest about it. Come out and sell the program as it is. Instead, they're trying to hide it through mandates, and that's wrong in Texas, as it's wrong in Washington.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Look, the best way to explain this, the best way to explain what's happening to our insurance companies is this. Would anyone think it's fair to say to an auto insurance company, I'm not going to buy any auto insurance unless I'm in a wreck? So when the police comes up and your car has been totaled and the other guy is being taken to the hospital.
Now you call Allstate and say, hey, I need a policy.
I need a policy.
Oh, okay.
And they can't turn you down for the wreck you've just had.
That's exactly what's happening.
Exactly.
In the medical.
How does Allstate survive if everyone gets to do that?
Well, if you, I don't know, have a law that mandates everyone use Allstate, is it one way?
I have to have auto insurance, though. I do have to have auto insurance.
Well, it's funny because that's what the left says, that you have to have auto insurance. First of all, it's not true in every state, but still, the bottom line is, you're right, it makes no sense if you can get it after the fact. And while you have incredible compassion for people in those positions, you have to find a different way to handle it and deal with that issue rather than enforcing it on everybody.
Back in just a second.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So the assistant varsity basketball coach at... North High in Des Moines, Iowa.
The other team wore red, white, and blue during the game, and apparently the other side has a diverse student population, so that was offensive.
They can't wear red, white, and blue.
I don't quite understand that, but okay.
Okay, so the assistant varsity basketball coach was quoted, and
He was quoted in his own words. What the hell were they thinking?
In the news report.
What were they thinking? I don't know. They love the country? Is that what they were thinking, maybe?
Well, do you know if that's accurate?
That they love the country?
No, that's an accurate quote.
Well, yeah, it came right out of his face. I saw it on the news report.
You saw him say it.
Yes. Okay. He said, well, what the hell were they thinking?
I thought it was
now,
printed.
Now, the only way that it could be out of context, I guess, is if he was talking about something else.
But he wasn't.
Right?
We reached out, and we wanted him to come on. And he said, I appreciate the offer, but I have to decline. The story is overblown. I don't think it is. And my interview taken completely out of context. So maybe it was, what were they thinking? I side with the guys wearing red, white, and blue.
No.
Okay, well, why doesn't he come on and say that then?
No.
He says, too many people believe everything they read blindly. And I'm tired of getting hate messages on Facebook from folks that don't even know the whole story.
Well, come and tell us the whole story, sir.
Sorry, I'm passing on the interview. Yeah, Paul, see, I don't think I want to go on and do an interview with the two of you sitting here. I mean, wow, listen to you.
Well, I mean, we'd let him tell his side, but we'd certainly express our side.
What, Stu?
You can't believe how mean, you know, and how aggressive Jeffy and Pat are and on this story. And it's interesting.
Why is that? Does anybody know what he's talking about?
You were the one in the break encouraging him to go read the stupid email. And they're like, I can't believe. Why wouldn't I come on with you guys? You guys are crazy.
Well, what did I say when they handed it to me? Pat was reading this like, wrong. I appreciate the offer. No, you don't, douchebag. And I said, give it to me so I can read it without the Washington Post spin to it.
Right.
So I'm willing to take him at his word.
There you go.
And his word, I'm not, because I saw his word come out of his face. I saw words come out of his face.
Okay.
Look, I
agree with you, Pat.
Yeah.
I agree that he is now backtracking because
he realized what a stupid thing to say that was.
I think what really
there is a closer. Thing to say. Closer. Yes,
you're getting good.
Yes.
I think the real truth of what happened with that story and is that he took it the wrong way. Didn't realize it was something they did all the time and believed they were targeting his kids.
But I thought he played there, right?
Cut him that slack. I don't care if they do it all the time
there,
or not.
He coaches there. No.
I don't care if that was the first time they ever did it. There's nothing wrong with wearing American flag colors.
But you're talking about the
as
act
long as you're not
intent.
Saying we're Americans and you're not. They're right. just dressing that way. The other team could have dressed the same way. Yes. Nobody would have said a word.
I think
would have been fine.
The difference is the action versus the intent.
I'm going to look something up here. I'm going to look something up here.
Well, right.
Okay. I'm reading Billy Holloway's book Fault Line, and he says how to be able to solve this. One, you have to be informed. I think we're informed on this story.
Yes,
we are.
I think so.
Okay. Don't tell me what you believe. Live what you believe. What are your values and beliefs?
Okay. We put on the red, white, and blue flag. We believe in America. Amen. Yeah.
Okay. Got to make sure that you're living it.
Right.
So the people that were wearing the red, white, and blue, they were living what they believe. It wasn't about that. It was team spirit for their school. Why is it that somebody else is, why is there a problem here? Most likely because people on the other side took offense. That was coming from them, not from the other side.
Right.
They took offense to it because they weren't informed on the subject. They didn't know these guys did this all the time. And they're not living their principles of, I am a refugee from a very oppressed place. And I'm coming to the United States for shelter.
And the United States has taken me in, so I should enjoy seeing those colors.
I might see somebody with an American flag color.
Yeah. I'm grateful that I live in a place with diversity.
Yeah. How about the fact that I'm at a basketball game looking at other students wearing red, white, and blue, rather than I'm looking out the window at an ISIS fighter slicing the head off of somebody?
Okay. Now,
how about that?
We're cheering on the game invented in the United States. Okay, I got it. Can I get Billy Hollowell on? Billy Hollowell has a new book called Fault Line, How Seismic Shift in Culture is Threatening Free Speech and Shaping the Next Generation. This is really important to pay attention to because the facts and figures in this book are accurate and they are going to fundamentally transform us. Billy, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's go to, you talk about in the book, you say, you know, one of the biggest faults we have, and I don't want to misquote you, but basically that it is the line between being tolerant and being relative. And we have slid into moral relativism where we need to be tolerant, but it has been used against us. How do we, first, give me the facts or the stats on this, and then tell me how to fix that.
Yeah, we've got over half of the country saying that it's up to cultures to figure out what they think is moral, right? So there's this baseline of morality is completely gone. I mean, the majority of us are saying, oh, you just have to decide for yourself what you believe is true. And that's specifically true with millennials. 51% of millennials believe that truth is relative. So you have a big problem there. And so that's sort of the starting point. How do we fix it? Well, you've got to acknowledge the problem first, which is that the Hollywood content we've seen, media, universities, all three of those have really reshaped the culture. We've allowed that to happen, and we've allowed that to happen because so many of us have disengaged. So, you know, my big solution to this, and this is from a 30,000-foot level in Fault Line, is that we've got to get engaged. We have to make good Hollywood content. We have to make, you know, get involved in media. We've got to be professors. We have to be out there. People who are Christians, conservatives, people who are complaining, you know, it's great to complain, but what are you going to do to fix the problem?
Yeah, we have to make an impact in the culture. It's interesting that you note in the book, Billy, that 35% of millennials have no faith whatsoever. They're atheists or agnostics. Is it 35%?
So that number, in fact, and it's crazy because every 2 years, you know, a new study will come out. It was 2015 that Pew first came out saying it was about 34-35%.
Wow.
Now we've got a poll out saying it's about 39%. Wow. Now those people are, and here's sort of the hope, they're atheist, agnostic, or just unaffiliated, and the biggest chunk are unaffiliated, but those are the people who we're going to lose, right? If we don't go out there and bring the message to them, we're going to totally lose them. But the hope is, hey, they're not agnostic, they're not atheist, they believe in something, but because of this, you know, chaos that we've created in culture and that we've allowed, they're just not sure what that is. So we've got to get that message.
Billy, nobody, I mean, I think the churches are approaching, most of the churches, many of the churches, are approaching these things all wrong. They're still coming at it with the same style of message. The message has to remain true, but the same style of message. And if it's not the same style, it's just the same kind of almost judgmental message, except now it has, you know, fog machines and rock bands behind it. People are not, millennials are not interested in talk. They're interested in show me the results, do it.
Absolutely. And so we've got a lot of Christian actors, which is great, right? A lot of Christian journalists, which is wonderful. But we need actors who are Christians, directors who are Christians. I mean, look at Hacksaw Ridge. Look at some of these films that tell really good stories. And I think Christian movie making is great. God's Not Dead, all that is fine. If you want to preach to the choir, that's great. But that is not going to solve this problem. We have got, and I know you've talked about this a lot over the years, we have got to get engaged. And I think the whole point here, you know, with this book is to show the problem, right? These numbers, you mentioned the statistics, a lot of us don't know. We kind of have a feeling Hollywood is off, the media is off, universities are off. We see these anecdotal examples, but we don't really have the data. And I wanted to really put that data out there and sort of show that there's this triangular dominance and sort of what I call this progressive privilege that has existed in these areas for too long. And yes, we've got to complain about that, like I said, but we have to figure out how to tell the stories and do it in a way that reaches people and shows them, not just tells them the message.
There's a video that came out of a viral, Billy, that right after the election that I saw a lot of people posting. And it was, you know, a lot of the left was kind of coming out and saying, how could this have happened? Donald Trump won. Here's a guy who, you know, said, you know, he was going to grab women in ways, and look how crass he is. How is this? The culture allow this? The culture is getting so much more crass. And this person pointed out, hey, wait a minute. Have you guys noticed that every piece of our culture, forget the president, every piece of our culture has become more and more crass over a very long period of time, and it's been cheered on by the left. And you really go through that in the book, and that the development from, you know, as we've gone through on television and in movies has become much more advanced to that the anti-faith sort of side, and many people haven't even noticed it.
Well, and that's why you've got to look at the numbers from like 2007, 2002 to 2014, 2016. When you look at what Gallup has measured and others have measured, I mean, moral acceptability on so many issues. Even polygamy, you go down the line, it's insane because of the relativism, what people are now willing to accept. We've got, you know, 67% of the country saying that having a baby, you know, outside of marriage is morally acceptable, 72% saying divorce is morally acceptable. And these numbers have changed dramatically even within the last decade and a half. And we have been pushing, we've allowed this to be pushed out. We haven't been effective in our messaging. And I think, you know, the fault line really kind of leaves people convicted a little bit, and I hope, you know, has us thinking, how can we do this? Not all of us can be directors, actors, you know, professors, but, you know, we have to figure out how we can at least encourage people, good people who have their values in check, to enter into these arenas.
I have to tell you, though, Billy, the answer really is living it ourselves.
Right.
I mean, look, Donald Trump, you can blame Donald Trump on a lot of things if you want to talk just about him to the left. You know, they try to, well, you take responsibility for him. You know who Donald Trump is? Donald Trump is the first Howard Stern president. That's what he is. Mm. He's a guest on Howard Stern that loved Howard Stern, played hard, and we all laughed, and we all thought it was great, and some stood against and said, no, this is immoral, this is wrong, and those people were driven out of society because they have sticks up their butt. But this became the mainstream culture. And look, that's just how guys talk. Yes, they do talk that way on Howard Stern. And and now we seem to have a problem. The left does, because they don't like that. Well, okay, but you were fine with it. You're totally fine with it in Hollywood. If anyone dare says, like clean films or clean pure flicks or whatever that is, where they want to edit and make things less crass, how dare you? Don't touch my art.
Well, they've created this environment. I mean, they have created this very environment, which is so fascinating to me. Everything that Donald Trump has represented and everything that both candidates represented in the general is basically what they have created. And so they're kind of relishing in that and trying to figure out, you know, well, how did we get here? Well, turn on primetime TV and you'll figure out how we got here. I mean, you can't even, there's nothing you can watch with your kids outside of the middle and maybe a couple of other shows.
We tried to say that this is why character matters in the 90s, when the women's organizations were defending Bill Clinton as just a rogue. No, that's like saying what Donald Trump said. Well, that's all the way men. No, if that is the way men behave, men shouldn't behave that way. Those are boys that behave that. Men do not behave that way. But it requires us to be consistent. And I like this about your book. You know, you talk about how most people can't even tell you what they believe. 95% of Christians, according to Billy in his book, cannot tell you what they believe. Well, that's a real problem. The first thing we need to do is figure out what we believe and then live it.
Absolutely. Living it out. That's the example we set, right? And so we've got to do that, and we have to encourage other people, particularly millennials, because that's the generation this most impacts, although I'm sure the generation behind them will be hit even harder by this. We've got to figure out how to have that presence, but doing it by living it first, I think, is the most important. And that's what I encourage in Fault Line, and people can get more information at HollowellFaultLineBook.com.
Billy Hollowell, the name of the book again is Fault Line. Billy wrote for The Blaze for a long time, and I'm so proud of you and proud of your success and to see where you're going. Thank you for everything that you're doing, Billy Hollowell. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Name of the book again is Fault Line. Now this, North Korea testing missiles. They're testing missiles in the same way that Iran is. They're exploding the missiles at just the altitude where you would want an EMP to explode. EMP is
And for a long time, people were saying, oh, look how dumb they are. It's another failed test.
Right.
No, that's what they were trying to do.
That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And now we're sitting here, and the Pentagon says that is the number one threat against the United States, EMP. Why? 95% of America... 95% of our population will die within the first year of an EMP.
Oh, don't exaggerate it. The report only said 90.
It's only 90%.
I mean, there's an additional 5% of the population that would be alive.
Wow.
What a liar this guy is.
Wow.
Jeez.
The Glenn Beck
All right,
Program.
Write this down. Tomorrow we've got to get to the feud between the black guy in Get Out against Samuel L. Jackson. That feud is ridiculous that's going on. Also, the Al Gore statements.
Oh, geez. We got to get to that tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Don't miss it.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.